Good evening. This is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Facilities Committee. That promptly chairs the committee, Councilor from Ward 5. To my left is Susan Albright, Councilor at Large from Ward 2, and Vice Chair of the Committee. On the other side of the table, we have Lynn Gentile, Councilor at Large from Ward 4. Vicki Danberg, Councilor at Large from Ward 6. Cheryl Lappin, Ward Councilor from Ward 8, and our Committee Clerk, Nadia Khan. So, as I said, we do have a large number of grants of locations. Most of them are pretty straightforward, and most of them are from Eversource. So, you should be joined at the table. I imagine you're representing Eversource?
I am, tonight.
Okay, so just give me a moment to read the name for the record. And by the way, I know that President Lenny cannot join us tonight. I'm expecting the others, so we'll just get going. So the first item is, and I guess we'll take these items in Ward 2, 47-17, petition for grant of location at Washington Street. And would you state your name for the record?
Karen Johnson.
Okay, from Eversource.
On behalf of Eversource.
And you're going to be with us for the next, I don't know,
eight items.
All right. So,
I'll be warmed up.
We've got a big pile in our packet.
Oh, it's good.
All right. Would you want to state your case on the first one?
Yes. On Washington Street at and westerly from manhole 3383, approximately 43 feet south of Walnut Street, a distance of 673 plus or minus feet of conduit, and to install one manhole.
Okay. So, Susan, would you like to?
Yeah. So just to be, the conduit goes from Walnut Street to Washington Terrace.
To approximately Washington Terrace.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I asked, I'm sorry, I don't remember your name.
Yeah.
Karen, mm-hmm. I asked Karen, who is a private client, and I was wondering if it was our Washington Place project.
I believe it is still I don't have all the details about this project after this.
The odd thing is that I asked Mr. Clark if he had arranged this, and he said no. That he had to die, that's maybe it's a benefactor of Mr. Clark doing it.
Well, so they initiated work for
yes,
the question.
Yes.
So that's how they got started.
Well, this is the question that I asked. There's a lot of utilities on those wires. A lot of different companies have wires here. And are we going to is this typically how we do it? We tear up the street ones, the wires at a time, to put conduit in? It's a question for you. When a massive set of wires is about to go underground, how do we do that? One at a time?
Well, it all depends on the petitioner. Eversource petitioner, we need to focus on their utility. And we can't force Verizon and all the other carriers to sit on the ground when they're not part of that petition.
It feels crazy if they're all going to come in here and we're going to tear up the road, one at a time for the next, however long it takes to do it. It just feels like it's disjointed a way to do it. Do we have any choice in the matter?
No, really, no. I mean, the only one that we're really working with everyone is the Austin Sea Park,
there's a long-term plan for Washington Street, though. So, Jim's not here tonight, and he says a family matter. So, I'm guessing that DCW is collaborating not only with Engrid. Oh, same here. Same Mark is here, so maybe you can speak to them. Not only with Engrid for gas line repair, which we're now committed to make sure gets done, but if we can find out if there's plans to put underground conduit in for the length of Washington Street as we're moving through. Okay.
But this project is only for in front of Washington Place.
I understand.
This one's in New
York.
That's why I mentioned that, because Washington Street has big plans over time.
Right, but it's at least a year and a half away. So that, Lenny?
it would just be helpful, Karen, not just for this one, but as you go through these, it's helpful to us to know why the work is being requested.
Yeah.
So do you know why this is being requested?
When I ask why this particular work is being requested, it is because there is another project going on that area of Washington Street, and they were asked to take this overhead service to the underground. So they're going to take down a couple of poles and put all, you know, the rest of the service in that particular underground for this particular project. And then there's another request for the residential commercial space. I think that's what it was that was going in there.
Is there another request for Washington Terrace? Has its own set of poles? Is that coming down the road?
I know on this particular job there are 3 poles coming out.
Okay. So you don't know about anything else beyond this project?
I don't know anything else.
Okay.
Well, it sure sounds like it's the off.
I know, but I talked to Robert this afternoon. I don't know. Unless somebody else in his office didn't know.
You talked to Robert and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, is that an issue for us?
No, no, it's not, except the coordination issue. If there was a plan and if we knew that, you know, if there was anything we could do to get it coordinated, it would make so much sense.
Well, I don't know if it's an issue, but I think we should have an idea of why the request is being made. It's, I mean, the need for it, shouldn't we? I'm asking.
Yeah. Who requested it? We haven't asked.
We don't know that.
Well, EverSource's request.
But that was coming.
Right. Horst told me that he had been to EverSource to say that this was something he was going to pursue. But he didn't say that he had pulled the trigger on it. Ours is not to question why, but I'm
what kind of it?
Does EverSource make the request, or
no,
does the client make
the request? Well, EverSource makes the request to us.
Yeah.
So we are looking at this proposal.
It has to come from the client.
Asking for it, and we like putting things underground.
Yeah.
and the road is all cut up, so it's not like it's been repaired recently. We're hoping it gets repaired. So, when this comes here, I won't move approval, but I think we should try before it comes to the full council to find out more about what's going on.
Okay. So, before I open the public hearing, now the first grant of location recognized Barbara Dussel Fraser, Councilor Ward Tessler from Ward 3, and Mark Laredo, who's leaving Councilor at Large from Ward 7. So with that, I'll open the public hearing. Is there anyone to speak for or against this particular grant of location? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing.
I'll move it to you, and I think we should try and find out if there's more to this.
We make it subject to second call.
Second call.
So we can get more information.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. What would you? What type of information are you asking?
Why are you doing?
I would love to know if EverSource has usually one of the utilities does a comprehensive plan for the undergrounding, and has that happened? So that I would love to know that.
So is this part of a bigger plan, or is this specific to one project, and which project is it?
Do
the utilities typically coordinate with one another on a comprehensive plan, on an undergrounding plan?
Nope.
No.
Somebody does a plan, don't they?
Isn't
that correct,
Shane?
Or
Doc?
Yeah.
Somebody
goes in.
Usually the utility that's requesting it will submit the plan for engineering to look at,
and then does the city then do a plan, a coordinated plan, so that you don't open the street to a three times?
Because we don't have the right to do that, because it falls under the Public Utilities Commission. And then the other thing is it's very similar to the gas lanes. There are regulations with how those conduit thing for EverSource can be to the gas main compared to a conduit for an RCN or Comcast or Verizon. So it's very challenging to just do one trench, lay all the conduit and the gas main in one trench and go about the business.
So typically Eversource will come in, and we'll open the street, close the street, then the gas train will come in, we'll open the street, close the street.
Very similar to a water or sewer project, but one has to go first, followed by the other.
Mm. Okay, Lenny?
So in terms of what we're asking Karen to get us, I would appreciate knowing on whose behalf Eversource is making this request, and then the reason for it, whatever you can get along those lines, and we know, you know, why it's being done and who's requested it. But right now it seems like it's a big mystery.
Well, I think there's two things we've asked for. That's one, and the other is whether this is part of a larger plan that Eversource is crafting.
Whose project is it
now? Yeah, if there's more, if there are poles in the parking lot behind those buildings, mm-hmm. and there are poles down Washington Terrace. So are there more poles coming that are part of a grand scheme?
Is this the biggest one?
Yeah.
This project stopped at Washington.
Right.
It stopped there.
I know, but the project, if it's by the project, the project borders Washington Terrace.
Okay.
And there's poles down that street that are pretty ugly as well. I just wondered if that's eventually part of it.
Most likely not. It was not included in this.
Right.
Okay. Can you follow up with our city clerk with any more information you're able to get? Thank you. So, are we ready to vote?
Yes, you
did. So we have a motion to approve
subject
to second call.
We should make it clear that when we say subject to second call, and I'm not saying this to be threatening, but if we don't get the information that we're looking for, then it won't go through. So, is that fair enough?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. All in favor of subject to second call? Okay, you're
standing. I'm
standing
to make this a discussion.
We're here, okay. The next
doesn't
one.
Stop some of my colleagues from voting.
The next one is related to this one, I believe. Mm-hmm. So this is for Guy Wire, Hip Guy in Washington Street. And this is 4817, so also Washington Street, also Ward 2. And Karen, can you confirm the rationale for this?
I'm sorry. Why are we doing this?
Oh, well, it seems to me this is a guy wire that is being requested because you have to end the line of poles.
Right, they're ending the line of poles. Right, and there are two other poles that are coming, 91, 92, and 93, that are going to come out. So that being the last pole in that, well,
right.
will need to be entered pole.
Okay. So this petition is just for the hip guy.
Yeah.
For the last pole. Okay.
So
go ahead.
Can you describe how the guy will be, that will go? There is a sidewalk that runs here.
Right, small sidewalk. If you're looking on, you're on the post office side of Washington Street.
Yeah.
Looking at the address, it should be on the right hand side.
So it won't interfere with the sidewalk? Well, how will it be organized? Okay, so it'll be parallel to the street
right.
when you come down.
Right.
So people won't be able to trip on it.
Right.
Okay.
And Mark and engineering, John, mm-hmm. when we do hip guys or hip guys, they're going to be visible. No one's going to decapitate themselves. We make sure that that's why we're asking. Yeah. Okay. All right. So, is anyone here to speak for this petition for a hip guy? No, seeing none. Close the public hearing, and we have a motion to approve the hip guy.
Yeah. I didn't move it, but I think the information that you're going to get is about if there's a larger project out there. Because if they're going to remove the poles on Washington Terrace, I don't know why they need a hip guy.
On Washington Street.
I understand that, but the poles attached to that pole that are going down, the poles that are, sorry, let me try that again. The wires that are on Washington Terrace are attached to that pole. So if those wires go away, there won't be that kind of, the pressure off that pole. So the information you're going to give us for the further information on the other one might help us on this one as well.
Okay. Do we need this one to be subject to second call?
No.
Okay. So this is a motion to approve in the event that we pass the other one, if we pass this one without the other one,
yes,
well, yes, we don't need it. So we have a motion to approve.
Do you want to accept the second call, though, or no?
You know, the Washington Parish polls are not on the docket, so I guess we need to get Guy Wire, but I don't know why they're not on the docket as well. So I do need this, apparently. We needed this, so I guess
earlier work is going to happen, and we have to support this poll.
Yeah.
So we have a motion to approve. All in favor? It's unanimous. Thank you. Okay. I'm going to do 7. Okay. The next one is 4917, and this is in Ward 8, taking for grant of location at Calden Pass. So Karen, would you like to have a few words to say?
Okay, well, this one, why do you want me to read it? Just sit down that with you.
Well, either you got to read it or I have to read it.
I'll read it. Southerly from pole 359 over 12, the distance of 39 plus or minus feet of conduit, and also at Calvin Path. At east southerly from Hanson Road, a distance of 501 plus or minus feet of conduit, and to install 2 manholes.
Okay, so
Hanson Road and Calvin Path. So, Councilor Lappin, why are we installing 2 manholes? And I mean, I did see the letter, but what is the upgrading underground service? What's not with the underground?
For reliability, actually.
Because there's a lot in this area, but
right.
That's several.
Right, so there's basically the underground service is open and it needs to be taken out. It's a direct area. And there's a lot of new construction going on here, so. As part of that, they're upgrading the service for reliability. And it's that direct area into conduit.
And in this particular area, is it just a new house, or is it just overall
upgrade? Overall upgrade for the area.
Okay. And I know we have the other ones aren't for us right now, but there are several of them, and I would think it's part of kind of the same project.
All the same project.
So when do you think this project will be done?
Depending on approval, if it's scheduled within 3 to 4 weeks once they reach that construction group. And they said basically weather permitting, running into any issues, 3 to 5 days before they're actually done. And I based that on this one, which was the longest amount of conduit, which is 540 feet.
And they're doing all of them at the same time?
Same time. I mean, not all the same day.
No, but like the whole project for this 5 days?
Right.
In all of
in this job. It'll be 3 to 5 days.
So they won't be done simultaneously. We've got a slew of them in Ward 8.
Yeah,
right.
And they're all in the same area.
Right.
So they're not going to do, they're going to do it and move
they're
to the next one?
This, yeah, they're going to do this one and move on to the next one.
Okay. All right. And it's all for upgrade of service.
When you say reliability, what's unreliable about the service that's existing?
Well, the
I don't get complaints about
you don't get it's direct there. It's been there for a while. The when I went out there, the size of the homes that are going in there now, they're using a lot of electricity as opposed to what was there. So eventually it will come solid.
So you're anticipating it will be.
But also because it's direct there, it's not in conduit. When it gets wet, then it goes out, then they have to more down into this area.
So there's a radius, an AM radio station in this area.
Okay.
Not
that again. What do you mean again? It's never gone away. And people get interference from the radio station and. So you're gonna put in conduit.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you want to note anywhere that there is a radio, there is AM waves, just in case they need to know that if they would do something different, if something needs to be grounded better. I don't know, but we've had issues
relating to...
Don, would you like to speak to this? How is there any relationship between underground conduit and...
or grounding?
There should be, because the conduit's going to be all plastic and will be in case of concrete. Uh-huh. There should be any insurance between the two. And the AM station you're referring to, I believe, is on some of the floors.
Right.
So that's all on private property, so there wouldn't be any... They're not going to get anywhere near that.
Right, right. But we've had incidences where there's interference and it has to do with, and there's a copper wire or there's something from either Eversource or Verizon or somewhere that has, we've had to get the company down there and there's, anyway. So if you're putting in fiber or plastic or whatever it is that better than what's there now?
Right, because now you have it. No.
So it's wired. Right. Okay, so the wires. Okay, so those have been. So this will theoretically make it better. Okay. All right, great. Good to know.
I do believe there's someone here who wants to speak down and sign a second. Open the public hearing. Would you state your name and address for the record, please?
Yes, all Blackie, 741, John Melville. Could I?
Please go ahead.
Would you mind stepping around this picture and tell me what you think it is? And it's part of Eversource.
It's part of what?
Eversource. I wanted to speak tonight because there's always a lot of promise and there's never always the follow through when you're living there. First of all, does anybody know what this neighborhood is called?
Okay.
What
is it?
So, you know about the radio towers, and you know the promises that were made, and you know that most of the shrubbery that was promised was never put in. But what was really worse that nobody anticipated was that in putting all that in, the road got very badly. It had to be chopped up. And then it was temporarily paved, and it was not permanently paved for 2 years. But nobody really thought that there would be that kind of repercussion, because who would have thought of that? So for the people living there, this is a tough thing. You know what that is? That's a plastic manhole cover, because, and it's on my property. It's not like near me, it's actually on my property.
It's 751?
741. What happens is, it's right on the side of Simpson's Path. And the city very kindly brings equipment through Simpson's Path to clear that path because it's crucial for Solomon Chester. That, on Stonehill Broad Parkway, is a major drop-off point. Simpson's Path is very safe, and parents can drop off their kids if they're actually more safely than going on Stein Circle, which is like a roller derby most of the time. So with the kids' safety in mind, think about this. Last year, that manhole was overrun by the piece of equipment. It took us, living in the house, calling here and calling Eversource, from last March till this September to have anything put on. There was a hole in the ground with five-year-olds being dropped off for school. They finally covered it with a plastic cover. And guess what happened at the first snowstorm of the year? When the equipment came through, it shattered. Now that was December, and we can't get anybody out to see it. And are you telling me they want to dig up my neighborhood and put in new manhole covers? I know that there have been several postulations about why this is happening, but why would we let them do it unless you knew why so many lives have to be disrupted for corporate reasons? And until you can hear from other people like me that we have perfect electrical service, it does not get interrupted. We do not need more current for these big houses. They're only one story bigger. And it's not like more people are living there, right? It's just more space. I don't see the need for this, and this has come to the conclusion. And given their service response, I am frightened. for them to be doing this in a place where there are many, many kids. And I have the picture that I took this morning as I got into my car. I wanted it to be as recent as possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So, engineering and DPW. How's your relationship with Eversource when these covers get broken on these pathways?
That cover looked like it was a fiberglass handle, not a manhole. It was a big difference between the handle and the manhole.
What's the difference? It's an access point.
It's a difference in service to customers. A handle is a service connected to an individual or to office. That's not classic.
A handhold is service connection to an individual property?
Correct. It's an underground connection, so you get one or two houses that goes to that plastic structure and fiberglass structure. A manhole is a concrete structure with a cast iron cover. Anything that's in that sidewalk in those paths should be a cast iron cover, which they all are, as far as I know.
Okay.
So it's something that's off the pathway that's got damage because of the sidewalk track. It's that you can't help. And sometimes you have to avoid a tree so the sidewalk track is, correct me if I'm wrong, saying sidewalk track they have to shift over to avoid the tree and not to damage the tree and clear the snow. But if the handhold is within the sidewalk, it should be a cast iron structure, not a plastic structure.
Okay.
When you go for the open sidewalk permit, it will verify that and make sure it's correct.
So this handhold cover, just a moment, let me just try to understand this. The one we're talking about, the one that has gotten shattered a couple of times, is off the trail?
I'm guessing it looks like it was washed off around the trail. Yeah. Well, I have. This is the first time I'm seeing that photograph, so I'm just assuming it's off the path.
I'm not sure.
Is it off the path?
Here's the picture. You tell me.
Okay.
So here's the path. Do you see that? I'll put it up here. There it is.
That's off the path. I see.
Right. It's off the path by 6 inches. By the way, do you notice that there's a yellow cone in the middle of our path? That's because Verizon did the same thing to us. Verizon has left a manhole uncovered, and there's a yellow warning thing because I don't want the 5-year-old to fall in. And that's been there since the summer. So this is an area of Newton that's like so much on the edge, whether it be ward in what it calls for. No one is doing a follow-up. And it's our nature.
So we have a slew of these that are very similar, all in the same area. And it sounds like we have an issue here that needs to be resolved. I would be tempted to hold this item until we get some answers.
Yep.
And the rest of them, if they're all part of the same network, then we need to understand how Eversource can be held accountable to maintain its covers. We also need to understand, Mr. Mark, how we're going to police the sidewalk clouds. Or maybe these plastic or the fiberglass or whatever they are. Covers can't be so close to the sidewalk, or something, or they have to be marked for something. But we have to come up with some kind of.
But if they're off,
okay. So I just want to be clear on the status of things. So right now there is underground service, and it's. There are wires that were buried some years ago, and you consider an upgrade by putting in conduits, will you be putting in new wires to increase the, I don't know what the right term is, but the capacity, which this gentleman says they don't need, but which you feel that you do need, or are you just going to be wrapping the same wires that are in the ground now?
Basically upgrading the wires. As far as capacity, I'm not sure if they're upgrading capacity, but I imagine, because even though a house is, you know, a little bit bigger, we use different types of appliances.
So can you confirm, and then also, if you had to guess, is this, because the box, we all know, is
with one of the newest developed areas in the city. Is it your sense that the wires that are in the ground now are the original wires? Do you think that they, could somebody be able to wager a guess on that?
I can guess.
Well, maybe you could check. Just,
the park, which park?
It's called Oak Hill Park. All these, all of the areas that you're in front of us on in Ward 8 is called Oak Hill Park.
So you want to know, are these original?
I'm wondering if these are original. I'm also wondering, would like to just have confirmed that you'll also be replacing the wires, and also if, will you be increasing culture capacity because you think that there's a greater need? Just so we know, one way or the other.
Sounds like the conduit itself would be improved.
Right.
And if it just moves, you know, I would like the information also, but it sounds like the work is probably necessary going into the future. But what I think we need to work out better is what kind of manhole covers or handhole covers need to go where. And as you're doing this, maybe they need to be moved further away from the sidewalk or something. I don't know, but I think that needs to be worked out with our engineering department.
Right, and if I heard John correctly, I'm not questioning with this, Mr. Plansky?
Plansky,
I'm sorry. But what Mr. Plansky is saying is that it sounds like it's an extremely dangerous situation that somebody doing the wrong thing could get electrocuted. But if I heard John correctly, it's a box that facilitates the service to more than one property.
Could be one or two properties.
Right. And typically that could be on, I have one on my property, so I the only reason I know what you're talking about. And so the electricity comes in and then it gets dispersed. So did you just say that it's not like, you know, like there's live wires in that box, or what were you trying to say earlier, John?
What I was saying is that it probably got cut because either a sidewalk tractor went over it or some heavy equipment traveled over that cover as well. Slowed on green or, you know, block cap or anything like that. A snowboard could go over it, and that wasn't a problem. So I'm guessing that cover was broken by something, you know, skid steer or block cap. Clearing snow or some other equipment that they could drive or whatever it was brought down there to the maintenance.
But regardless of whether it is a manhole versus, what do you call it?
A handhole.
There's both of them are still dangerous though, right?
They still have live wires.
Okay. So we probably, not that we're aware of this, or at least the people in this room are, that I assume we need to get on that.
We
will. Right away.
Okay. Sir, do you have something else to say?
Look at the bigger picture. Looking at to help them solve a customer problem, but customers have not come forward with complaints. So take a small out of the area and move yourself a little bit higher. What's so special about our area? We're a little tongue between West Roxbury and Dedham. We're a conduit between them. Are we being upgraded so that they can give more service to other neighborhoods? Since we're not complaining about our people calling, complaining about their electricity, there might even brownouts in the summer. We have plenty of electricity. So who is this for? And are we being used so that they can provide better service somewhere else? I don't know. But until we know that there's a problem, why are we telling them they can come fix something that isn't broken? There's plenty of older areas of Newton, aren't there? They should be working there.
They do. They work all over the city.
But, okay.
But
to get your point, yeah. I think. Yes.
Thank you.
Do you have something to add?
Yeah, no. We do tend to approve these in different areas, especially when there are old wires, because to prevent things from happening. But I think we do need some more information. And in addition to, was that the one that you said was open?
No, the Verizon has one, and Verizon hasn't even put a plastic cover on there.
So that's really dangerous.
So we have a fine phone that's been there the whole season.
Okay, can someone check on that one? Because if it's open and near kids, that's not good. Who can...
The question is here, right?
Is that who's
Once again, for the record, we have no authority. We can bring it to their attention.
Okay.
But we can't make them fix it. But so we can most utilities, but we will definitely bring it to their attention.
So just let you know.
The down wire, if we bring it to their attention...
Right. It's on the list for this month's meeting with the utility, right?
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay.
So, our
departments do meet with the utilities on a monthly basis now, and these things will go on the list. So,
what's in the plan? Let's say after 6 months with Verizon, what are my options that I'm not aware of? What am I not doing? What am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
Does anybody in the room live with a phone next to their house? Does it look as though
when there's a public safety issue, like an open hole, doesn't that move up the list? We can't have any control over that.
We can contact them and request that they go out there and fix it, but we don't have any governing authority over them to penalize them. If their infrastructure is within our right of way, and we've already given them the permission to have the infrastructure within our right of way, our authority stops there. Hmm. This is different than allowing them to put additional.
If we expect the utilities to maintain their infrastructure and not leave them in an unsafe condition, at the very least, couldn't we send them a legal notice?
The utilities, I'm comfortable saying that.
That's easy to say.
It is, you know, but then there's a petitioner waiting for service to their house, so it's a little more complicated.
We're talking about
Verizon right now.
We need to come back.
Okay, let's see if we can...
So can you, Karen, can you also check one thing, and can you look and see if there are any complaints that, from people in this area that, you know, that maybe this is what generated the work?
Are you talking about from Ward 8?
From this area, Flassy is saying that, you know, he doesn't think that there's any need and nobody's complaining. But he wouldn't know necessarily if one of his neighbors has been calling for whatever reason. He may very well be right, but I would think that you guys, keep track of this stuff. You keep track of the complaints. And usually, that's where the workload has come from. You know, people complaining about outages. I mean, if they don't want the work up there, I'd love to send you to Lower Falls. They lose electricity all the time down there.
So, thank you. Shane, did you have something to add?
On a side note, I just had a conversation with the executive office today. Our double pole committee that we have is starting to transition that over from not just double poles, but about other oddities like this, because down wires are always an issue. Responsiveness from the utility companies to down wires, to manhole covers, issues unless it's a live wire, it's very difficult to get them to respond in a timely manner. So I've asked the executive office to start transitioning those meetings over to bringing those things up so when we meet with Councilor Laredo's on that, so we can, and that's the representative of all the utilities.
And do we have the law department on that committee?
Alan Mandel is usually
there for it. The short answer is we made, just a quick update, we made considerable progress on some of the double poles, if for no other reason than we actually put everybody in the same room, and instead of pointing fingers, they actually went out and did stuff, and including our own city departments. I mean, I think it was fair to say that the not insignificant amount of delay was caused by our internal stuff. But, Shane, I think you've all been very helpful there. I think that's a great idea,
And I'd be very happy to continue those meetings because it's so much of it is just getting the people in the room to talk to each other. And it was not always the big bad utility. At least with the double pole.
Okay, Len.
I just want to get one other thing on the record. You've heard a little bit about this from our Preston Street meetings, okay? The way this is supposed to work, the way government works, is there's a liaison with big organizations like this. And we have a liaison, I forget the gentleman's name, and Shane or Jim or whoever should be able to call this person and say, we really have a public safety issue, all right? This isn't a double pole. This is a public safety issue on a path that young kids are on. It needs to get fixed immediately. And it should get fixed immediately. We don't have great success to our liaison, all right? I'm being charitable. And that's the problem. All right, we've heard about it on some answers we've been trying to get on some stuff with Eversource from regarding an old little power plant, and we can't get straight answers. So that's part of the problem that we have, or a big part of the problem, at least from what I'm experiencing.
However, the department is meeting once a month with each of the utilities, correct?
Is there
more than that person?
No.
Okay.
But we will contact them tomorrow. We do have his number. It's Mark Lucas. We will contact him tomorrow. Part of the issue, I think, is that Mark Lucas has he's our liaison, but he doesn't have the authority to tell the church department to make the work happen. He can communicate with us like you do.
We've had him in here before.
But he doesn't have the authority to say make this happen now.
So I'd like to wrap this up. Does the gentleman have one more short thing to say?
I have 60 seconds.
Yep.
I'm understanding that under the green Eversource cover could be live wires.
Okay.
I think when I get home, I need to call Rabbi Sobel, the principal of the director, so that he can direct the parents to not have their kids take that route to call the director. Because nobody wants an electrocution.
Understand.
Thank you.
I think what I would like to do is hold this hearing open, and I suppose I need to read the rest of the events of the record, but I'm thinking that they're all related. There's a network of work that's going on in a particular area. We need some more information about what exists. You know, do we have a 1940s system under there and the condition and so forth, and to justify the need, but we need also for our departments to be in close communication with someone reliable at Eversource to make sure these things are getting addressed.
So are you asking, because you didn't mention Mark Lucas. I cover Marlene, so that's probably why I don't have a lot of the information, but are you looking for someone to come to the next meeting, or are you...
I think we're looking for this information to be delivered. There will need to be someone to come to the next meeting when we'll take these up as a group.
Okay.
Because I think it's a group effort here. And we will certainly need someone to come to the next meeting, but in the interim, we're not gonna put this on the agenda again until we have some answers and some coordination.
All right, so if there's any not in. And if there's somebody who fixes,
do you have the address where this problem is happening? It seems to me maybe you could do something about it tomorrow.
What I can do is call it into a government emergency line, same as I'm sure he's done already.
Yeah, really?
You don't have like an internal connection? I can go in tomorrow morning to the office and, you know, they've got their job scheduled. I can't make them contingent upon this. Well, that's part of the
problem. Because what they have to hear, we're not taking this up again because we have the current situation repaired, and we need to have some direct communication regarding ongoing maintenance for these covers and whatever else requires it.
Okay.
So with that, I'm going to just read the other few things and we'll leave the public hearing open. Does anyone else have anything to say?
Just one question for John, and you don't even need an answer now, but do you think that it's possible that what Mr. Klatsky is suggesting about this work is really being done to improve service in some other area, that that's possible, or is that not how the network works?
Based on what they've decided, the conduit and the conduit they're putting in, it looks like it's a localized service, not a transmission line.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so.
All right.
Is anyone in?
Okay. I'm going to read the rest of these. So this was 49-17. We also have 50-17. I'm not going to read all the things. So the 51-17, 52-17, 73-17, 74-17. I'd like a motion to hold all of them until we get the information we need. So, motion to hold, all in favor.
Nothing better than local politics.
All right. Thank you very much.
Well, thank
we look
you
forward
all.
To hearing from you.
Hope you enjoyed your time here.
I learned about 20.
Try to get those longest straw next time.
I'm also going
to go to Walton.
I think that if all of us could give our paper back to Nadia, so we don't have to have
the editor's paper,
unless they're going to hold on to it.
No, not Nadia.
But Nadia will bring it.
Right. I think if we, let's see, just the ones on the board 8.
Oh.
So what we did is the Washington Street location is held subject to second call.
Gave
this woman a lot of homework.
The rest of them in
Ward 8
are held
until we get repairs and all.
Alrighty then.
We now have in our packet from Selco. Can I get a Selco one also?
Yeah, you put it in.
No, that's the big one.
You want
to recognize that. Okay. Item 72-17 is a cell phone petition for granted location several places. We have Commonwealth Avenue at the intersection of Boylston and Chestnut Street. Actually, there's more than that. I'm going to read it here. There's one on Boylston Street, which I understand has been withdrawn. So if we're all looking at this giant packet we got.
Is that the first one? Number 11?
The first one has been withdrawn because it's in the state of right-of-way. The second one is utility pole Eversource number 102200, located in a public right-of-way on Com Ave, on the island at the intersection of what I think would be Com Ave and Chestnut Street, not Boylston Street, as well. The third one is the utility pole number 2X, located in the public right-of-way on Albemarle Road, adjacent to 350 Albemarle Road. This is all one petition, but was three locations. Now we have two locations, and I believe we're joined by Attorney Mason, who I think can sit with us. Now, you may have some opening remarks, but let me just offer. We had a meeting this morning of our wireless subcommittee group, which is getting very large and even more complicated.
Thanks a lot.
And there seems to be some confusion over who owns this pole. And Alan Mandel contacted me. This is the pole. The 2X one.
Yes.
The second item. Alan Mandel produced, probably from being in touch with you, some kind of a lease agreement. However,
we're full attachment license.
Full attachment license, yes. I spoke with our city engineer, who is here, John Gaglian, and it is not clear from the city side that there couldn't be an overlap of ownership in some way. So, because there was a point during the previous administration, as I understand it, when the city took ownership of poles that had only light fixtures on them when we were changing out our light fixtures, and we were not able to resolve that by the end of the day, but I'm going to let Don speak first
yeah, sure.
to make because we're going to have to hold that one. Okay.
So today I asked the law department to take a look into it. I'm really young to give you some more information. Back in May of 2000, the agreement was made by the city and the Boston Edison at the time during deregulation that the city would purchase the streetlights. And it included a whole list of streetlights that would be part of our inventory, and it's literally Exhibit A. And Exhibit A is about 30 pages wide, or long rather. And on that is a bunch of streetlights that we own on Albemarle Road. But unfortunately, it doesn't clearly state that if it's just the streetlight that's owned or the pole as well. But in their other communications from former Commissioner Bob Bruning to Attorney Dan Funk, there was communication that utility poles on Washington Street, which were wooden poles, were also part of that agreement. And then at that point, DPW was instructed to go take the full inventory. And what happened was between where Lamonte was a traffic engineer at the time, when he left the city, Clint Shuffle came on, and that got lost through the shuffle. So long story short, I'm 95% no pun intended. 95% sure that we own the wooden pole, we own the utility pole because it's only a utility pole that has a streetlight on it, nothing else. And that was part of the communications that went back and forth between the law department, public works, from the public works commission. Unfortunately, the gentleman who has the inventory has been out here for the past couple of days. I believe he's going to be in tomorrow. So we could follow up on that, on the ownership of it. And so there's a lot of time for me to follow up on that.
So we should hold that one. So to me, that's unclear enough, but that just needs to be worked out. I agree with that. I guess I'm surprised just because we have the Eversource license saying we own the polls, go ahead. So, but that is... I defer to you on that. I think that makes sense.
Okay. So the three parts of this petition, the first one is withdrawn. The third one is held. We'll hold it. We'll move to hold. And the middle one is what we want to take up. So if you could address Barbara's question.
Sure. I'm sorry. I know we had talked about this at the last meeting about increased fees for these kinds of applications. Has that gone into effect yet?
No,
that's been taken up in finance.
Yeah. And I'll mention something about that because we it's relevant. We talked about that today, and I know Cheryl talked to Lenny. It will go on the agenda when we have some more specific information. Alan Mandel's working with Alex Curtis in particular, and also he'll be contacting DPW to get very clear on what kinds of effort, manual labor, maintenance requirements, and so forth might go along with any of these things.
I was hoping to come up with a next step.
Yeah, right. We know what some other things are, but we want to do the due diligence, and then it will go to finance, probably not for Monday, probably for 2 weeks.
Yeah, so just so finance is not holding that item up. We want to get a recommendation from the folks. They're doing a lot of work in their group, and so we want them to give us a recommendation. I have already said, make it as high as you want to make it, personally. We need to have them make the recommendation. We'll review it, and then hopefully just sign off on it.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. And the other document that we were looking at has also not gone into
No, they got together.
That.
Well, that's
taking up
a
time step on
Monday. Then we're going to talk about this, but we have not put that into place yet.
So that's correct. Okay. And that's a good observation. I'm going to let Elizabeth present the concept here, and then we have... Nadia did bring this, right? Yes. So Nadia brought a copy of the conditions we used for the last several that we would hope to attach to this request, assuming we can approve one of these. Okay. Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Jason, Chair for Bride Lana. I'm with me also. I have Dan Brown from T Square. To address the RF coverage issues, so I'll probably defer to him on that part of the discussion. Essentially, this is just another one of the small calendars that we have been rolling out in the city. Most of all of you have approved so far. This one is at the corner of Nutwell Street and Chestnut Street. My apologies for that, but very bad. But ComEd and Chestnut Street. It is going to be a side mounted antenna as opposed to, I think many of you have proposed to date, have been top mounted, although there's been a handful of side mounted there as well. This one will be sort of a little bit of a shorter, squatter pan around the antenna. It's like 2 feet tall by about 15 inches wide as opposed to the ones that you've seen before, which are about 3 feet tall by about a foot wide. So a little shorter and very much a little wider. It's going to be, the pole itself is about almost 38 feet tall, and it will be on the side about 26 feet tall. So about two-thirds of the way up.
That's one address.
This is a 1400 ComEd, roughly. In the public way, it's a 1400 ComEd. So the idea that in the island, or
in between,
that's in front of the house, but yeah, it's ComEd, I feel like. And if you're going to be able to go on to the poles there.
Between the carriageway and ComEd?
Yeah.
We have submitted a front of our application, an RF affidavit from two philanthropists there, which is Dan Work. And we've also submitted a report from John Hayes, who's the certified house keeper that she's been here before. Thank you very much. To give his opinion that any radio frequency emissions emitted by the antenna will be orders of magnitude below the maximum critical exposure levels established by the Federal Communications Commission. So basically, for this particular antenna, at 6 feet above the ground, the radio frequency emission levels will be at only 1.2% of 100% being the safety level. And if you're at 16 feet, that would be a second floor. You know, assuming if we're closer to a home, it's not. I just put it out of the scene, the carriageway, and the tower itself. This could be about 4.5% of that 100% level. So, well below the maximum possible total level. Beyond that, and could ask Dan to talk about why Verizon needs this particular antenna at this particular location.
I think in general, yes, but where we're going in the direction of wanting to understand the rationale for any location.
Absolutely. And we have submitted these RF affidavits with each, because I think maybe not the first 10, but since then, since Mr. Galenti was here at least once, if not more than once, mm-hmm. and Dan is here for 4 feet tonight in his own right.
Good evening, Dan Brown, RF engineer with the Experience System. So Verizon is proposing a site to provide coverage improvements and additional network capacity through a targeted area of Cleveland. So specifically, they have identified heavy network traffic along Commonwealth Avenue, specifically in the vicinity of Chestnut Street. This facility will help improve service by not only improving signal strength to the area, which has been determined. I do a bigger plot as well if we think it would help, but similar to the plots that have been provided in affidavits, the facility is located at the urban boundary between two existing facilities in the area. One located on the Newton Wagon, the name for the cell site, it's a small plaza at the intersection of, I think it's Windsor Road and Beacon Street. And then the other facility, Newton 5, is actually located across State Hall, where we are. So where those two power boundaries of the sectors meet, it currently has signal strength below that required for reliable service. Those two facilities are experiencing heavy network traffic, so the small cell will essentially remove the tendency of those facilities for the users traveling through that area. We expect that site to cover to the west along Commonwealth Ave, going towards the bend in the roadway as we approach Exeter Street, east towards the bend in the roadway near Prince Street, Bridge Key Road, north and south along Chestnut Street and the surrounding residential areas. It will also have offload de-system facilities that are currently served in that area at a lower, less reliable signal screen, improving service elsewhere within those effective footprints.
Thank you. Any more questions, Carol?
Today we were talking with Alex, who is from the fire department, and he was talking about a certain point, radio frequency. We don't want it to interrupt our public safety network. So, John, is that something you look at when you look at So is this, do you think in the future maybe we should run it by Alex just to make sure? We're going to be putting a lot of these, unfortunately, up.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that's what, I mean, is it, at least we should be, notified.
Well, we're going to, Johnny, we're going to come up with that department approval, and they will be on that, one of the approvers. So eventually we will have them.
We're planning on it.
So that the rest of the committee understands.
Yeah.
We talked this morning, it's a ways away because the software we need.
Software's here.
Well, not being utilized, apparently. Yeah. But there were five departments we talked about having a look at any of these positions, and that there were going to be a certain criteria that we're going to look at that we published. We were a long way away from getting this done, but there are different concerns that different departments have, and moving into the future, there will be more concerns as we're, for example, picking decorative light fixtures for village centers that we're hoping to renovate. We're trying to be comprehensive in our thinking about, you know, where we'd rather see this stuff and what are the bodies we'd like to try to meet.
But public safety came up and you know, we were talking about, he was talking about the network that exists and that certain places could get overloaded, and we just wanted to make sure it was protected. So I don't know where we go from here, since we don't have our sign-off yet, but I feel like anything that comes through here should... Yes.
I need to comment on that. While interference into any operator's network is of concern, most specifically the public safety network, Verizon is licensed to operate in four different frequency bands. They have specific licenses that they transmit and receive. And so they only transmit and receive in their licensed spectrum. No other operators or public facility operators are in that spectrum. So they are unable to interfere with them. And of course, as Verizon's own network becomes overloaded, there is always a concern that they're not going to be able to put through any sort of E911 call. So as part of addressing an overload sector, it will also enhance public safety communication for the Verizon wireless users in the area.
But are you saying you operate on a different level and you could never
affect
So it could never affect our public safety?
Correct.
In addition, go ahead.
So Verizon Wireless has their license on the FCC. They are the only operators that operate within that specific spectrum. Public safety operates in a much lower spectrum typically.
Mm.
So Verizon Wireless cannot necessarily interfere.
Mm. Okay. So kind of. All right. Well, I still think that you could be run by
John, to what Alex was talking about this morning in lay terms.
Well, actually, it wasn't even this morning, it was a few minutes ago.
Oh,
yeah,
well, John's been there at every meeting.
I recall correctly, in terms of emergency response of both police and fire, so that there wouldn't be any interference with anything that we need versus what the private cabin would provide.
He gave us an example of where it did happen. I don't know if you were at that meeting.
I don't think I was
at that
one.
I mean,
I'd be curious to hear that.
It was something that was happening in public work. It was an issue. Well, I'll come
Do you have concerns about this particular location?
not from public works services.
Okay. Do we feel we need to? Well, we have not done this before. We really have only talked about it in committee that we might like to have this rolling approval mm-hmm. process. Anybody, I'm going to look to you two because I think the more people look at it, the better because it's uncharted territory at the moment. So
yeah.
Can't hurt to have them look at it.
Well,
the location doesn't violate any of our conditions. And so I'm inclined to approve this, but if folks think we need to approve this, subject to second call to make sure we go through public safety that we've hit that bar as well.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's in a different place, but it would help
to provide copies of the licenses. Mm-hmm.
As long as it's not in the band, it shouldn't.
It shouldn't be. Well, that's what I heard.
But
he brings it, so I'm... Well, no, he gave us an example of where... So
I voted against it, and Scott Lennon voted against it. Scott, not to speak for him, but I think he was pretty clear that he was voting against it because he wanted to see the system that he was setting up in place and for these petitions to go through this review process, which I haven't heard a lot about, but from what I've heard, it makes sense. And I think it's us doing our due diligence to protect our constituents. So what I don't understand is, with all due respect, why haven't we just told people that hold on to your requests until we get this in order, because we're not taking them up. I don't get what his sense of urgency is. Which is why I voted against the last ones. I'm going to vote against all of them.
We have a period of time within which to act on a petition once it's filed, as I understand.
Yes, that's correct.
And in the last round of petitions, we got two time extensions as we developed what we thought was, you know, reasonable conditions that we wanted to adhere to. In the public way, just for putting equipment on hold in the public way. So we passed those conditions to those orders after we got a second time extension. So with any new petitions coming forward, is it a 90-day from the time it's filed? And if we need to go longer than that, we have to request an extension and there's documents that have to be signed. I've been signing them, by the way. And not that that's a heavy lift or anything, but I can tell you this committee is not working swiftly. We've interviewed a peer reviewer who gave us a proposal. We felt too open-ended with hourly rates and descriptions of things. Mm-hmm. We've gotten to a point where we've nailed down a scope of work that we're interested in, several scopes of work we're interested in. We might actually be going out to other people to help us. We've made some progress on our own. Alan has a bunch of stuff this thick for us to review in terms of setting policy and design guidelines versus ordinances and application forms. But it's tedious and slow. So I can guarantee you that if we're going to wait on all these petitions that are coming forward, I don't know that there's a sense of urgency, but I do know that there are dead spots in the city. I do know that our constituents want service. I know that the city itself wants service. So trying to move forward in a way that is reasonable, and a location like this seems to me, it's not impeding anything. So the only concern, this is just me, but the only concern I'm hearing with this one probably isn't relevant because if they're on a different frequency band from what our emergency communications use, that would be the only other sign-off we don't have on this. I would be happy to get that from Alex, from Alex Davis or from the fire department. get their, them to verify. If we've got John Dagley in here, he doesn't have any concerns. BPW would be also on the list. ISD would be on the list, but they have to issue a permit anyway. So, yeah, we're trying to come together with a process and codify it. Meanwhile, we've got some draft material that at least this petitioner is willing to sign on to. So that's kind of where I am.
So it's just one question going forward. So the peer review, what are your thoughts as far as who would be responsible for paying for it?
Well, okay, so that's why we want that to go through finance, because if there's an enabling law, Massachusetts Modernization Act, among other things, allows us to, if we put an ordinance in place requiring peer review or allowing us to request peer review for a grant of location, for any kind of grant of location, it could be for underground conduit or whatever, that we can request that and have it reviewed at the petitioner's expense. That's the simple story. There's a much more complicated story, which is that the engineering that goes into putting together any one of these locations is quite significant. So we're going to be in a position at some point of whether we're going to be, you know, what's reasonable to request in terms of peer review. The documents that come before us, so that we can have somebody at the table who can read them, you know, and or, you know, are we really, maybe there'll be a location where we're going to be asking for alternative locations which would require outside engineering. I don't know, right? But that's a big ask.
Sure.
So, you know, what does that say? The subject makes his eyes bleed. I feel that way. So, Cheryl Barber or Barbara Cheryl?
Just a question about the 90 days, and then last time we did extensions. I'm just wondering, in terms of dead spots in the city, I feel no urgency. I'm with Councilor Gentile on that. But if there's some other legal ramifications for why we have to move it along, I'm just wondering about that.
You get an extension. If they don't grant the extension, you deny the petition, and then they can sue us if they want. But hopefully before that gets anywhere, we would have this all worked out. So that's true.
Okay.
So I just want to say one more thing. This is new territory. We're not the only city trying to figure this out. Actually, Alan gave some of our work to, is it
Walton.
So, okay. So this is not as easy as it sounded initially. And also the peer review part, that's not going to be as easy as we thought it was either, because we found out that the information you give us, there are people who can look at it and see if all the numbers add up. But what they can't see is if the proprietary work that they do to get these numbers is true. The only way to do that is to go out and do their own with very, very expensive.
Like traffic counts.
Right? Yeah, but it's worse.
Peer review is typically will rely on the traffic counts if the petition is traffic itself that came up
right.
With.
Yeah. Well, So
what we'd rather do, that we talked about this last time, but this is long-term, is to come up with a citywide a set of guidelines and ordinances and applications and a citywide plan, you know. And for our next meeting, in fact, Bill Mulvey's going to have CIS map, emergency communications, locate the power network for the city. There's another relay system for our water meters, and see all city properties so that at least we'll have something to send to the consultants, and that we can start sitting down with to look at what opportunities we have. That then we can sit down with the providers and say, here's where we'd like to put stuff. What do you need?
So it seems to me this is not an unreasonable location. It's on front of anybody's house. Lenny makes a very good point about look, why is Slovenia in such a way as a master plan? Just vote no. So it seems to me we ought to put this up for a vote. Let's vote it up or down. If people say no, wait for the master plan to vote no, and then we just go forward.
I would guess the master plan is going to take 6 months.
No, I understand that. Really, I understand that. So we can each vote individually how we feel about that and go forward.
I'm fine with that, because will you follow up with the fire department or whoever it was that you were talking to just to make sure that they're okay with the site from a safety standpoint?
I'm going to ask that engineer.
If you want to do a subject assessment call for approval, make sure that there's no one in there with any of our emergency communication systems. That would be appropriate for me to ask you to do that.
Sorry, I was going back.
We're going to contact Alex and confirm or have him confirm that this particular location is not going to interfere with any of the city's emergency communication systems.
Okay, would be helpful. I sent a copy of the licenses. I probably should have it in the FCC way, but about our evidence of our FCC licenses and what spectrum testing.
Okay. Thank you. You sent that to the city clerk, and Nadia will get it to you. Thank you. Okay, this is where is this? So I also noted that with the last one, and I just put it in here, that the petitioner agrees to not causing the pole to be a wireless tower or base station. They agreed to that last time, and they're part of the condition. But
yeah,
I want to
say
number seven.
Alan and I wrote these together. Really, I mean, Alan did the first draft, and I, you know, peppered him with comments. But this is definitely a joint effort, and we're on board with these.
We've been in the loop on the draft. Yeah. This is the exact set of conditions that we used last time.
So I'll move to subject a second call for the information we
have. Okay, thank you. We have a motion. All in favor?
Just for the record, I heard what you said about the location. It is in the middle of the neighborhood. It's right in the middle of four houses at each one of those corners.
Every one of these is going to be somewhere in a neighborhood.
Well, no, if I was going to vote for one, I could see myself voting for Elmont Road because it's not near anybody's house. All right.
How close is it to
Elmont?
No,
right. It's right in the. I mean, you've got houses on every one of those corners. That's not in Commonwealth. I just don't want you thinking that it's not near anybody's house. It's surrounded by houses.
We said not directly in front of somebody's house.
How about this as a proposal? But we also send this to plan into the urban design folks to see if they have any steps to the location. Three steps to its location near the house. Concession call.
Fine.
I'm not asking for that. I just want you to know that it's in the middle of the neighborhood.
By the way, before we vote, is there anyone here to speak for or against this proposal to the public hearing? Seeing none. Close the public hearing, and we have a motion in favor from the students. All in favor? We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in favor. 1 opposed, and 1 abstention. All right, thanks very
much. Thank you.
We have still a lot of work to do, folks.
Thank you very much.
But I'm also going to suggest that this packet of information also go back to Lori, so we know what we're looking at the next time.
Right there.
Thank you. Right there. Because it's one docket item, and it only includes one. So we just can go around to us again. So the next item is an update on the Herder School construction project. Item number 189-14. And I want to say we're joined by Councilor Dan Kohler at large from Ward 7.
And we are joined by Alex McCarthy of the Public Buildings Department, and I will let you introduce the consultant for the Zervas project. I'm sorry to make you wait. I thought you would be in here by 8 o'clock, but there's some complicated stuff going on. So, Alex, do you want to introduce the
team
and tell us why we're getting an update on Zervas?
So of course, as you all know, from Alex with Public Buildings, we have Steve Farr from NACE Engineering, they're our traffic engineer, and Tom Murphy from NV5, who's the owner's project manager. So we're doing a brief update on Zervas School drop-off, Beethoven Street, Beacon Street, and sort of the resolution of a number of presentations that we've done for 2 years on how we are going to propose to deal with Beethoven. So maybe the easiest thing, Steve, if you just kind of put this up, this is a low-tech presentation. This is what will be, what we're proposing based on the feedback that we received from the various updates that we did with the community. We met a couple of times over at the Wobbin Library with the Wobbin Area Council, and we had also met with the School Building Committee for Zervas and looked at a number of ideas. If you can recall, all the way back to December of 2014, when we did site plan approval, the original had suggested drop-off lanes that was basically in this zone, which would have widened the street and pushed the sidewalk onto the school property. And then there were a number of alternatives as to whether we would shelter it and create a turning lane, or leave it all the way through, or shelter it and create no turning lane. And eventually, the ultimate feedback that we got from the series of times that we presented was that the residents of the community were more supportive of not widening the street than widening the street. And so they asked, could we figure out some other ways that we might be able to deal with the traffic flow and look at the intersection and how we might handle the drop-off and pick-up by essentially leaving the street the way it is, which is basically what we're going to do. We're going to leave the street the way it is. Now, one time there was a suggestion, before the project, most of you know that the street operated as a do not enter in the morning and afternoon. And so during drop off and pick up, basically no traffic was allowed up the street. But it was not a one way street. So the question was asked if the street could function as a one way street at certain times for drop-off and pick-up, and try to utilize this lane for a left turning lane. So we evaluated that, and Steve looked at it, and tried to find some precedents, and we met with the traffic cluster, and with Dave Kosis, and Dave Babcock, and the traffic engineering folks, and we sort of concluded in that group that you really just can't run this on a part-time basis as a one-way street, and let traffic counterflow in this lane, because eventually someone will be at the wrong place at the wrong time, and that's not safe. So we decided in the end that what we would do is the street will be do not enter. Emergency vehicles will still have the ability to flow up this street, which was always a concern by the fire department. The do not enter signs will be either lit signs or signs that have some flashing LEDs to make sure that people understand at the time, and they will be synced up with the traffic signals. The signals will get new, the traffic signals and stuff will get a whole new controller and software that will allow us to program it for time of day, day of week, to account for the drop-off and pick-up time and coordinate those lights that will advise people that you can't flow back up the street. And then the intersection design, we went through, and of course, we got a lot of feedback, and we have looked at it with numerous folks, including our ADA coordinator, And as I think, again, many of you probably in this committee know, we have been moving away from the apex crosswalk. So the apex crosswalk can really end up with one curb cut and one crosswalk at each apex of the curb, which is what exists there today. So these have been moved and set back in a way to now be accessible for those people that are vision impaired. Obviously, they still have handicap ramps and provide that accessibility, but still functions for the intersection for the children that come up. There is a crossing guard. And we've actually laid this out at one time with Collins and reviewed it with Dawn and with Dave Babcock and concluded that the crossing guard can still handle the intersection in this configuration. We've had a request that could we move this down, but Steve has advised that there are requirements for setback distances from the curb line and the gutter line. So these new crosswalks will all have pedestrian lights. They will be all timed together, and when the pedestrian lights go, then this is an all stop. So you won't be able to make a free right, and then we will coordinate the signal timing once it's in place to monitor the flow of traffic on Beacon Street and the flow of traffic coming from Beethoven and Evelyn. So it'll probably take some tweaking, but the software is made to do that. And then the only other real things on Beacon Street, of course, is we need to introduce the school zone sign and at the proper distances from the school. So this work is getting ready to go out to bid. It'll be bid through DPW, and it'll as part of a road work improvement. And this work, we're getting ready to get the site contractor back now that
work is over.
And again, in this layout, just so we go back, none of this has changed. We're holding all the setback for our planting trees and fencing, so we're really swapping out what would have been the drop-off lane for a slightly wider sidewalk, which the residents have sort of requested, and some more green space. So in the future, if someone really determined that they really wanted to create the drop-off, it could be modified within that zone without impeding any of the design of the school layout. And everything else, these radiuses get a little adjusted because obviously this sidewalk, would have been further back, is now forward, so there's some minor adjustments. But beyond that, the rest of it is as it was designed and approved, and everybody seemed happy from our last update. Two weeks ago with the residents, and we did that again right before the Long Area Council held their meeting. So that's where we're at. And I think I saw from the coaches that Traffic Council will take up.
Probably knows more about that, and I should just recognize Don Rice has joined us, Councilor from Ward 5.
The interesting thing is because we've been having Malcolm Martin from the Long Area Council here as well, but we've been having a significant amount of meetings about Beethoven over the last 3 years. The interesting thing is that at one point there was going to be a drop-off loop that was uniformly banned, everyone hated. And then we had a number of meetings about making Beethoven wider and having a right-hand turn lane. And but even though there's a lot of talk about Beethoven, the community strongly opposed making Beethoven wider and taking a right-hand turn. So basically, as the meetings have evolved, because there's going to be, more bandwidth, on Beacon Street, because the lights. The biggest issue on Beethoven now is not having a lot enough light with the new traffic lights. There's going to be probably some issues at first, just like we did have Prime Ninja, and then traffic and DPW are out there making sure the timing and lights, and I think the same thing could happen here. The first week or two, there's going to be some issues, and then as the the times opening up, getting more cars off of Beethoven onto Beacon Street is going to start opening up. And also what's going to be fun and injury is because once people realize how far it was in Beacon Street, they started parking thousands of miles away, they started walking to the school. And also a lot of parents found out that when they started busing to manage their car that hey, it's a lot easier, but they're getting an extra 45 minutes in a day, so they started having groups of parents taking kids to school. Mm-hmm. So it really changed the dynamic significantly. So, 3-4 years ago, this is very controversial, this project, and at the end, everyone is pretty much happy the way it should be. There's a significant amount of meetings about this too.
That's for sure.
All right,
absolutely. Anybody else have a comment, question?
I'm sorry, can you take a left hand turn from Beethoven?
You will be able to take a left, and you will be able to go straight, and you will be able to take a right. And so that timing will be the timing that will have to get adjusted, because obviously you have to allow for the movement, but obviously we have to control how far back this will stack up. So that's what John is talking about. Eventually, you know, over time we'll have to play with the timing of it to get the traffic flow going. And then all of this is really smart electronics, so obviously during 95% of the time it will be biased to beacon, right? So it'll probably be green, and then it will only go red obviously when you arrive at either Beethoven or Evelyn by triggering from the camera sensors that control the traffic. So I think that, you know, as everybody seems to be pretty happy, and obviously it's going to work better because all the buses and staff parking don't come in as they used to. They all access up here, as we talked about. So I think it's pretty good.
And the other issue that because we ran front traffic up to 4 or 5 years ago, and we made Beethoven, it's not a one-way street because it would significantly impact a large neighborhood, but Beethoven acts as a do not enter during drop off and pickup.
Yeah.
So that way all the traffic is flowing in one direction. So, and the neighbors, at one time we looked at making it one way only to drop off and pickup, but the new police said, if someone pulls into left hand lane and gets to pick up, we don't want to do that. So it's staying in do not enter, and we have a better electronic sign saying during drop off and pickup, don't
answer
Beethoven, which has been working
pretty well as we did on it.
Okay. Mark,
another thing? I just want to understand this. So it's going to be one lane going towards Beacon Street.
Correct.
That, and the other lane, which goes away from Beacon Street, you won't be able to enter that during drop off or pick up.
Correct.
But that lane will still be operative.
Absolutely.
And
you won't be able to come out and stack in here to make a turn.
So a homeowner who's exiting her or his house on that side of Beethoven will be able to go away from Beethoven.
Yes.
But all the neighbors from Beethoven, at one point when we tried to make it a one way, we asked a lot of neighbors to make it. How would you take a right hand turn on Beethoven while 150 cars are coming at you? The neighbor said we all go left anyway.
Mm-hmm. So as I understand it, then you're going to have a blue zone along here.
Yep.
You're going to have some backup on that blue zone.
You know?
Because people are going to, you're going to have a stack of cars, someone's going to go, the person ahead doesn't go, and there's no way to go around them.
Right.
You're just going to have to wait. And same thing with that car that wants to go left on the beacon. If they don't have a turn signal, they could be delaying it a fairly long time.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see people coming around once they drop their kid off.
I'm fine with whatever you all want to do, but you know, I do drop off at Bigelow every morning, and I watch how people do it there. You know, I can see that person, the second car, the first person sitting, they're going to go right in that left-hand lane
mm-hmm.
and try to take a left.
But at one point, they did, when we made a do not enter, the base of the service community said, hey, it's a one-way street. And they all lined up in the left-hand lane. And then the police came in and said, stop everyone. And so then the principal told the service community, do not take that left-hand lane.
John, if it works, it's great.
But it's it's been like that. I mean, it bogs down. The reason the Gridiron Anchor made a significant change. We had snow 1 year, and then I went to made a Gridiron Anchor. At one point, he jacked it up from Woodward Street. And because what happened was one construction tower would come down, steady cover, and drop off the pickup, and they'd look at hundreds of tiles coming at them. And the people would have to go into driveways, and it was horrible.
I'm fine with not entering. I'm just frankly concerned that you're going to get a fairly long backup if people see the drop off. But
it's been operating. It slows down, but it's been operating like that for decades. And but it's
fine.
And so, and the other thing we talked to Cindy, you know, Jervis, as Steve Stevens said, Jervis is not opening up at 550. Jervis is going to be opening up like 30, 40 students more. And then over time, as years go by, there'll be more and more students will see how it goes.
I'm fine. I'm just pointing it out, but if that's what the neighborhood wants and the school's fine with it, great.
Well, it's the neighborhood and the Jervis community. If you all kind of look at it, it's more than just making the street wider
I get that. There's trade-offs. I just want to understand it. It's fine.
Thank you. What's that?
This is the right decision, but there's definitely risk in this decision that those of us who were at this very first Jervis community meeting years ago now heard from the current parents at that time that one of the goals of the new school was to fix the drop-off, and for lots of reasons we've decided yes, the buses and the people parking that are different. So for most type of people, and so it is, and we're also making a decision to keep the utility poles where they are. So if a decision is made in the future that it sounded like a good idea, but the frustration is too high, it does mean spending it not just new pavement, you do it through the poles at that point. The only other thing I just wanted to add is for a number of years now, John Wright and community members and John Fleming and others have talked a lot about not just Beethoven, but the street and sidewalk in the, I don't know, quarter mile, half mile radius. And despite all our good intentions and all the times we've discussed it, somehow we still haven't managed to, where John said, boy, you really should get some extra sidewalks here or need some narrowing of streets to make sure. And it isn't like we didn't work on it, but somehow we're still. The school's going to open pretty soon, and the only place we're really addressing is Beethoven and the intersection right there. So somehow we still have to find a way, when we do these projects, to take a little bit harder, get the monies from, because it's non-school monies that we do it, and somehow still work better somehow. And I tell you, John's been magnificent, so I'm not pointing fingers.
And the issue is, I have Evelyn Road in the traffic council to do parking one side versus the other, which is slow from Beethoven into Evelyn, which is very far. And the other issue we have is Allen Ave. What happens is a third of the cars come down Beethoven and take the left-hand turn, that's drop-off. They take the next street, which is the big white boulevard, and then they go bombing down Allen Ave. You can look at traffic people have looked at Allen after Jervis has been gone, so there's no speed, no traffic. Wait till everyone comes back from car, and all of a sudden there's 200 cars again. So, but one of the issues is how to add traffic calming in neighboring streets, especially doing bump outs and other things. But until you really improve the demand on the other streets as well.
Thanks.
So this committee and then ultimately the full board approved the site plan. And so can I assume that, I know that there was talk about looking into this after the fact, but Can I assume that the street was not part of the site plan that we approved?
It's a separate project.
Okay.
Anybody else?
Do I motion to hold?
We need a move motion to hold.
I move hold.
Okay. All in favor of hold? Everybody 7-0. Thank you so much. That was a safe block, right? Okay, folks, I would like to skip over snow for a few minutes and go to something that requires a little more focus while we might still have our brain cells early. Right after snow, you're not staying for IBDD?
No,
Item number 77-17 is an ordinance amendment to deal with illicit discharges to storm drains. This is the City of Newton Revised Ordinances 2012 include new sections related to illicit discharges to storm drains, which meets the requirement set forth under the City's Municipal Separate Storm Sewer System Permit, which is otherwise known as MS4. So you're going to hear MS4 a lot, specifically about getting pollutants out of the stormwater, and there's new tougher laws to meet. And the next one by Maria Rose, first of all, and Ted Gerdee, who is the director of the Department of Public Facilities. And Maria, your title is
Environmental Engineer.
Thank you very much. So I'm sure everyone really enjoyed the bedtime reading. And questions at the ready. Go ahead, Ted.
All right. Well, hopefully it's a lot more straightforward than it looks.
There's more definitions than anything else.
You can thank DEP or EPA for that. Basically what it is, and Maria, just to give you a little background, Maria is essentially the author of the draft permit. And she can speak on behalf of that as far as how she came about. But we put it together, Maria put it together. It was reviewed by myself, Bob Wadick, and Jennifer Steele from the Conservation Commission. So the draft that you have in front of you, we feel, is applicable to meet the requirements of the MS4 permit. And the purpose of it is to have us have a what we call legal authority to enforce water quality issues as it pertains to stormwater and the MS4 permit. If you look at, which you're probably aware of, if you look at the existing, and these are in addition to the existing drain ordinances. But if you look at the existing drain ordinances, basically what's covered by them is, laying of the pipes, maintaining drains, construction of private drains. Really does not address, with the exception of section 2918, that you can't put steam exhaust into a drain, but it doesn't really address water quality issues as it pertains to our stormwater system. So we put these together. Like I say, they're going to be in addition to what's here. There's the definitions. There's what's accepted or what there are exemptions in here. Definitions, exemptions, and what you cannot put down. Obviously, prohibitive activities. There's also enforcement. Civil penalties, notification of spills, just to go through the ordinance in itself. So with that being said, that's basically the overview of it. If you have any questions on what you see, outside answer or Maria.
I'll just state too that in the memo that was sent with with the ordinance, this is a requirement. This isn't something that we just sort of pulled from the clouds and thought this would be a good idea, although it is a good idea if you care about the Charles River. But this is literally something we have to do in order to meet our existing MS4 permit. This is to just deal with things that we already do. We get calls from neighbors that see people dumping plaster water from new construction, just wheelbarrowing it into our storm drain, which is toxic stuff, and these contractors just don't know. And I have a little notice that I'm able to, you know, I get a spiritual door knocker and I door flyer the whole neighborhood and talk to the people doing the offending, but we don't have anything that has penalties and fines associated with that. It's very common for dewatering to occur on a construction site, and that water, we are the operators of our system, our storm drain system, and we have the authority to accept what we want into that system, and we just need to have much more clarity regarding when you're covered under our permit, then you need to meet our conditions. You need to let us know. A contractor can't just start dewatering and have turbid colored water going into the storm drain. So this is really to just provide legal authority for things that we already do, and tell people to stop doing if they're doing it, that they shouldn't do it, but that we would have to keep into, you know, there's a $300 per day penalty, and it's really to back up what we are required to do in our MS4 permit, which again, MS4 stands for the Municipal Separate Storm Sewer System.
Okay. I think that's Susan
first.
Mark,
I found
one quick question. What's
dewatering?
I'm sorry, I don't know what to answer.
Thank you. Dewatering is when you perform an excavation and you have to excavate below ground, below the groundwater
table.
So they have to basically draw the groundwater table down, and they normally into a catch basin into a brook if it's nearby.
So my real question was, so were you able to just pull the guts of this from some other?
Yes, ma'am.
That's what I wanted to know. Where did you get it?
I got it from something called the Adoption of Local Stormwater Bylaws.
Okay.
It was produced for Massachusetts municipalities in tandem with the current NIPI permit that we have.
Right.
And it was a list of like people from Fuss and O'Neill, representatives from different towns. DEP was involved, DCR, and it was just a compilation of Martin Pillsbury's on there. You might know him from the Metropolitan Area Planning Commission. And they provided three model stormwater bylaws. Then I looked at a few other communities in the neighboring area and friends where I had a lot of friends who work in Framingham. I looked at various locations. Greg Russell was here when I first started looking at it. He gave me one for Woburn. So I just looked at whatever, the surrounding communities as well.
I recall, I think you drafted this about a year ago. A longer.
Okay.
The first time I saw it.
So just to follow up, that was pretty much my question to follow up with Susan. So it was based on a draft ordinance, and then you took pieces from other cities and towns as well and tried to create an amalgamation of everything?
No, it mostly follows the model stormwater ordinance because that was really well written. I think I augmented it with a few pieces from other places. And then when Bob Waddick reviewed it, I gave him the model ordinance, and he put that in something he liked.
Okay.
So it's very comprehensive.
And the level of fines, was that in the model ordinance, or is that?
The level of what?
Fines.
That's all we can do.
Is that our max?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's by state law. It's
okay.
The maximum you are allowed to do is 300. Currently, we have in our current ordinance in the utility section is $200, but the maximum is $300 by law.
Great. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. This is an item that I took space with Deb on today, and it's in relation to the city now allowing developers to discharge excess water into the storm drains.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we regularly allow that to happen. I don't want to get into this too deeply, but can you just give us a short overview of what that process is, and is that something that we would deal with in something like this, or is that, as we talked about earlier, something that ISD needs to deal with?
No, we would deal with that under this permit. We would enforce that.
Well, engineering has a big role in that, and it's typically, as I understand it, it's an overflow connection for the most part. Mm-hmm. They have, the onus is on every prospective applicant and developer to infiltrate as much as possible, and they also have to hold it back. So it's usually an overflow connection, unless if there was any reason to believe that they weren't maintaining that system, just as maintenance would come up with Verizon and Eversource, that we would have that ability to make sure that they maintain the system, but it's usually an overflow.
Well, I think one of the things that it's come up with respect to a particular property that has not yet petitioned for a special permit.
Are you talking about putting stormwater or putting
groundwater
into our system during construction, or are you talking about the final design as far as extension?
An ongoing basis in which an area that is now at the foot of a hill that absorbs groundwater, that absorbs runoff from a large area, specifically Andover Newton Theological School, that whole hill, dumps into a low ground that is now going to be part of a project.
Ponding, for example. But I think the overriding question, though, is, so apparently on some sites, on some difficult-to-build sites, although we have a requirement to capture and recharge, according to 1% storm, or 100-year storm, some sites can't do that on, and apparently we allow folks in some circumstances, like you have a lot of lead or a lot of clay, or you're in a hole like this particular site. And I think where the conversations have been going with this may more appropriately be in zoning and planning, because, you know, I guess the real question is, are there sites we shouldn't allow people to build on?
That is a bigger question. Somebody from that Andover Newton Theological, a homeowner called me on that recently. There's concern. So that's not something that we really were doing here.
But where do we take that conversation?
I did say that Vicki could go ahead and raise it tonight, but that it would be...
We're not going to solve it tonight.
What's interesting about it is the connection between what we do here and these ordinances and what happens over in zoning and planning and the design standards that are supposed to be coming along with zoning reform, particularly around stormwater and retaining walls and grade changes and all that stuff.
I mean, to generalize your question, I mean, what we're talking here is the water quality.
Mm-hmm.
Once it gets into our system, how it gets there is really a planning, engineering function. But if you do allow an overflow connection, one of the particular things that you have to pay attention to is to make sure, because an overflow connection is going to first go to an infiltration basin.
Mm-hmm.
You got to make sure that gets maintained and that gets cleaned, so that when it does come time, if you have those conditions that you need the overflow, you're putting the quality of water into our system that's accessible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah,
I had a couple questions.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No. Okay. So I was talking with Maureen earlier, and she had a question that I'll ask for her.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, if you have a homeowner that's having a problem with discharging this kind of water, what relief can there be if the homeowner doesn't have an alternative place to put the water?
Yeah, I'm familiar with Maureen's situation. If you can't infiltrate it into the ground and there's no viable storm connection on the street, I don't know what to tell you. I know Maureen's situation where the concept was to take the old sewer and turn that into a drain line, but unfortunately, or what we found out is that that sewer that was supposed to get connected into the underdrain downstream of Quinnaby Quinn doesn't function, and that underdrain daylights out into the Charles River behind like Starbucks down on Washington Street. We do have in this spring, we're going to hire the contractor to go in there and try to televise that underdrain to see if, you know, we could open that up in order to alleviate and use that storm sewer or abandoned sewer as a storm drain on Quinnaby Quinn Road. You know, it could be a $50,000 fix. It could be $300,000-$400,000 fix. And then you got to do economics to determine whether I want to spend that much so that one person can drain your yard. You know, and then unfortunately, that's what you got to look at and make that decision. So, but you know, we're well aware of that, and we're going to take care of that.
Okay.
And do the best we can to try to alleviate the problem, I should say.
And just to clarify just a tiny bit, this new ordinance that talks about illicit discharges is illicit discharges for the storm drain system. The issue at Marine House we're talking about is an illicit discharge for the sewer.
Because it's
clean groundwater being discharged, it's an inflow issue.
Yeah, yeah.
So the issue that we've been working with her on for years is getting inflow out of the sewer because that clean sewage.
She doesn't need a place to put it once
right.
She gets it out of the sewer.
Right.
Like we understand that.
Right.
We do.
Yeah. For all of Plaintiff's
mm-hmm.
And it is not, it seems not to be my singular problem.
Okay.
No, I apologize because I pulled out reports going back to before I started with the city, which Weston, actually was Kaufman and Richardson at the time, did a sump pump survey all along Quinnaby Quinn Road. And the result of that survey is the reason that they wanted to turn that abandoned sewer into a storm drain. I understand that. But I was just trying to look at the economics of it because, you know, it could be a very expensive fix. If we can even find it, because an underdrain you have very little access to, and to try to get a camera in there and dig it up, and it's underneath a...
But the bottom line here is we're doing engineering and the investigative work this spring as planned,
mm-hmm.
early in the 20-year plan, so this is
mm-hmm.
our second year, so
mm-hmm.
that we can figure out if there's a solution that,
yeah.
that we can, so we can figure out if there's a solution, period.
Right.
But that is not related to this item before us, which we, and this is about, that's about, as Maria said, illegal connections to the sewer system. This is about illicit discharge to the stormwater system. So the ordinance before us is meeting a state requirement for
Correct.
To help control stormwater quality.
And it would be perfectly legal to have that sump pump connected to the storm drain system. The
yes.
concern is the capacity that you need to control.
Understand.
Right.
Understand. So I think we have Ruthann and then Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
Forgive me, she has already done this, and it's better to say we've dealt with it. Pollutants that can't go in it include sand and salt. We need to coordinate the more with things and CCW on any of the street cleaning or salt sales even more aggressively. And I know we're doing street sweeping more regularly, but we have to operate the trucks so that they're not sweeping into the storm drain.
It's just all settled in your own practice, so just say move along.
Well, it's not settled against the state allows, but that doesn't mean that we can't pick up street sweeping and use how we resolve and so forth separately. We actually do have an item that is on the docket that we need to get back to with respect to that, but I think we're going to be hearing more about how effective the brine has been and how much salt we're using now and all that sort of thing. And we are, as you know, we're sweeping the streets more frequently, which supposedly helps.
So is it an effective amount? It's number 15 on page 5. So page 15 lists all the exemptions. So it starts at the bottom of page 4, and it's number 15. Discharge, to protect public health, safety, welfare, or the environment, in particular, this exemption shall apply to sand and salt that is applied to driveway, sidewalks, streets, parking lots, for DIY and public safety. Too much sand, but we do have to recognize that public safety is a concern.
You wonder if we can meet the controls coming forward with relative to the other needs that the city has, but that's another topic as well.
I'm sorry, this is a very small thing that I wanted to understand because we had had some other conversations in here about sump pumps, and I don't exactly know what a crawl space pump is, but if someone has a basement that fills up and you walk by sometimes in the street, you can see that they have a little tube coming up and they're putting that out onto the street to then go down the drain. Is that legal? Is that the exemption we're talking about? So that's okay. People do that.
Yeah, the only reason it's called out as crawl space is they may not have a basement. Most homes around have a basement, but it could be in just a crawl space.
Okay.
The only thing that's not legal is to say there's a most
hard icing.
I know. Tracy has one more thing, and then I would like to wrap this up.
I didn't understand that was legal. I always thought that if you discharged onto the street or onto a public way, that was not allowed. Is that in fact
that
okay?
It's supposed to be on grass.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you have to be on your own property.
Away from the sidewalk. Yeah. You are legal.
How do you see?
It's even just a foot away.
However, it's going into the groundwater, not into the...
Cannot put it out onto public.
Right. However, if you're causing an icing condition on that sidewalk, then you're going to violate another ordinance. So you're behooved to put it a little bit back onto your...
There's quite a few illegal conditions around
the city. Yeah,
you just have to be careful when you come to discharge. Try to get it out on your lawn.
Right.
You got to get it out far enough so you're not recycling it.
Right. It's not coming back in.
Yeah. So it's a challenge on some sites. Okay. So there's a balance to a lot of factors.
There's a
lot
of
impact.
I want to thank you for bringing this forward. We have a motion to approve the ordinance as drafted by Councilor Laredo. All in favor?
Me too.
Thank you very much. So much. This is moving on to finance.
Do any
of you have bookmarks? Or I will leave them here.
Okay.
Thank you. You're off. Okay, item number 7617, appropriate $1 million for snow and ice removal.
Oh, this is easy.
$250,000 in personnel overtime and $750,000 for rental vehicles. Didn't that snow fall?
We did.
So we're requesting $1 million to help supplement the budget as the chairwoman, as Terry just read into the record. This will help carry us through the end of the season and hopefully pay for the remaining snow balances that we have.
Do I have a motion?
Summer.
All right. All in favor?
One question.
What are we up to so far? One question.
54.2 inches.
Okay.
It's money, though.
Right now, we are sitting at $4,581,466 to date. We do have some expected salt bills to come in. We've refilled our salt shed since this storm, as well as some additional invoices in Parks and Rec.
So we had 100 inches, 7 million, right?
So what we're in finance, and I'll let you know when it's going to come up. Is it, I need to talk to Sean tomorrow to see if anything's pressing other than that. And if they're looking, we're not meeting Monday in finance, and we'll take it up before the full board meeting on April the 3rd.
Okay.
All right, so we'll let you know that. But for that meeting, if we could just have a little bit more financial information as you just gave us. But we were told in the very beginning when there was concern expressed about the cost per inch, that the cost per inch would go down because of some of the upfront costs, and that those would get spread out over time. So I just want to know a little bit more about that.
We can do that. Our cost per inch right now we're tracking is $84,528 per inch.
How does that compare to other
years? Pretty much in line, but you have some other bills to come in. So it's going to be higher than that, I think.
Last year we finished the season at roughly $96,000 per inch,
okay.
And that was 35.7 inches, whereas this year we're at 54.2 and we're sitting at 84,000.
So you think we'll get up to 96
or we
will?
I hope not.
$71,800 from the stormwater surplus account for the purpose of funding professional engineering services that design the construction of engineering phases of the rehabilitation of the Flowed Meadow Pump Station.
Did everyone see that? I hesitate to shut off the light.
I know.
Everybody know where the Flowed Meadow Pump
is? You can't even see it on this.
There's that little dot. Rumford Ave, yep. Landville. Here's Lexington Street. And Flowed Meadow, basically. And you see this little brook here?
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to the next one, this little dot, that's the pump station. And this next one, which is that.
Beautiful.
From everything that I'm told, I haven't spent a lot of time looking up the history, so I don't know when it was built. It was installed basically to control the water elevation of that meadow for the mosquito abatement.
Mm.
And basically what it does is just while we're seeing inside, I'll go back. Right here is where that little brook comes in, and there's a trash grate here. So it comes in here, and then this station actually goes about, I want to say 18, 20 feet in the ground. And what it does is the water comes in here, what we call a wet well, and then there's a submersible pump that's down here, set on float, and basically just pumps right across in the walking path here, and it just dumps into the Charles River. That just shows you the electrical controls, so there's the fuses in it. Yeah. This is the entrance, and if you look at this wood planking, underneath that is where it goes down 18, 20 feet. So you kind of get nervous when you walk in. We did put new motor control. We just actually rebuilt the pump. I'm asking 71
$800,000 for Woodard and Kearns to basically design and do the construction administration. The construction is going to consist of a new roof. There's a hatch up here that needs to be replaced, obviously the door, electrical controls. There's two windows in here that are going to get permanently sealed. New electrical service coming in. This is the SCADA control, or SCADA controls we put in.
What is that?
The SCADA is telemetry that tells me when the pump's running, the elevation of the water, if there's a power outage, and I can look at that right on my computer. My assistants all have it, and the main computer's down at the pump station at Quinby Quinn. Control and data acquisition. Mm-hmm. So I can literally sit at my desk and I can turn pumps on and off versus going. But
tremendous
not a good time. This will go inside the station for the simple reason is we put it out here temporarily because we knew we were going to rehab the station. But you want to get this inside so the kids don't vandalize it. The other thing that happens is this is the other side of the trash rig, and it's got a fence around it. What happens is kids go down there, they throw branches, they throw everything in there, and it gets in here. The trash rig itself needs to be replaced, so it goes in there and it jams up the pump. And then we get a call from the people that are walking, the flow metal is flooded. And so we have SCADA, that's how we found out. The company, Western Advanced Services, it does RONM, tests on this station about three times a week.
That's a lot.
Yeah, well, they do a whole series in around it. But anyway, new roof, you know, you can see where this was painted because there was graffiti on it. Controls, new fencing, new trash grates. We'll put some type of fencing over on the top here, like a some type of grating so the kids can't throw stuff in there. In your package, it makes out all the
money they're asking for is to
design engineering.
How much do you think this is going to cost?
Well, I'm hoping probably, you know, about $300,000.
Okay.
I think it's a conservative number.
But it needs $70,000 worth of engineering?
Well, it's for design and then also the construction and weather engineering when this goes out to bid.
Mm-hmm.
Plus the bid documents, shop drawing review.
Okay. Vicki had a question and Mark had a question?
Yeah, a couple of questions. How close to the building does the brook come usually? It seemed to me that it was right next to the building.
Yeah, this, from here, Flow Meadow, the brook comes right, it actually flows right up against the foundation.
Well, how high does the brook get at worst?
It'll basically try to sink over the elevation of the Charles River, so it'll get, it'll get up to, ground level here.
And the next question is, if we've got a constant sort of low-level vandal problem, would it make sense to put, since you can monitor the electrical and manipulate it, to put some kind of a camera that you could? Or a dummy camera even?
A dummy camera, the thing about cameras is, you're not going to monitor 24/7. The only thing it's going to allow you to do is when vandalism occurs, you can go back and try to figure out who did it.
There's a street near Crystal Lake that we're seriously considering putting a dummy camera and a sign. I'm not going to type it in.
No, I said, who's the lead?
Put application sign on it, it says high voltage.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
or, you know, beware of dogs. All right. Mark has a question.
So I take it you feel that this pump station is still really needed because it controls the water flow in the area and otherwise, you know, flooding people's homes? Is that
no, it won't. It won't impact anybody's homes. It's strictly for mosquito abatement. That's what I've always.
So is, let me ask you a more fundamental question. Nothing wrong with mosquito abatement, but is that worth spending $350,000 on?
Good question.
What is our cost? I'm just trying to understand what's our cost benefit for getting mosquito control here, and how bad is the mosquito problem without this?
I have to check the health department and see what they say. I don't have a lot of historical data.
I think we ought to look at it.
All kinds of disease. I'm all in favor of eradicating all the mosquitoes. Okay? That's not my point. I'm going to get in trouble with the environmental group when I say all.
It's not right next to a park.
Forest Grove. There's a walking path that goes right by it that goes into the cove.
It's right near the cove, which is used quite a bit, including, you know, all of the, a lot of cookouts that people get in the Parks and Rec runs a lot of programs.
Do we have other mosquito control facilities elsewhere in the city? Is this the only one
that I'm aware of?
Can you describe how this works to control mosquitoes? Is this in lieu of, and we get to save a whole bunch of chemical sprays because we have this?
So it's not standing water anymore.
Right.
Yeah. If this pump station will...
That's what I wanted to hear.
Yeah. I'm not saying that's
what I
this is a pump station. You can see like these little rivulets going through here. This area, yeah, there you go. This area right here would flood.
Hmm.
And this is where all the water gets.
So we'd have a swamp-like area there.
Oh, yeah.
Breeding ground.
All right, fine. I get it.
And I don't know the square footage of it.
I get it.
And it's swamp-like that people use that?
You can see the walking path.
I know the walking path.
It goes up to here, and then it goes down to here, and then actually...
And that gets flooded.
Labasso, I think this is Labasso, comes down in here. Right around here,
and find out. Just one follow-up. Could I ask Ted that you perhaps just chat with the people in public health to at least quantify it?
I want to find out when it's built, you know, who built it.
You're going to be talking to them anyway, so just get their thoughts on that, and if you could maybe communicate that to us.
Sure. Send you a memo or an email?
A paragraph would be more than sufficient. I just want to have some sense that, you know, we're going to spend a bunch of money. You're going to need to spend it.
I'm hoping it's not going to cost that much, you know.
Let's hope not.
But it's a big number for design and engineering if it doesn't cost that much. That's what I'm thinking of. The ratio is high, seems to me.
So we're using an on-call engineer for this?
No, this is what an intern would just bring him on board just for this. The people that maintain it is Western Sampson Services, who maintains the station, the elevated storage tanks, the reservoir, 10 wastewater pumping stations, 3 water booster stations, all the emergency generators. They're in here every day going around all the stations.
Well, I mean, to your point, we do a lot of this work. And we don't bid it. And I do bring it up from time to time. And my good buddy Lou gets upset because he knows who the good engineering companies are and which is the better one for the job, and I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how we know that we're getting our most competitive prices if we're not putting these things out to bid. Lou's not here. What do you think?
It's a certain application. Water Turns, the only reason that I chose them is because going back to 95, they actually did the first sampling of all the outfalls.
They're familiar with our drainage system. They were the ones that also put the SCADA package in here, so they've got, you know, all those electronic controls and the telemetry that links that to quantity plan. Should we just, I'm sure there's certain projects out there that we should ask for RFQs.
So the number that you gave us, is that pretty much came from them? Well, asked them to give you an idea, or?
I asked them to give me a cost to design it, to put the bid specs out and do the construction administration. Now, you know, we're not necessarily going to, we may not necessarily spend that. That's basically not to exceed. If we get a contractor in here that can knock this out quick, then obviously the construction engineering costs drop. The design, I would think that probably that portion of it probably pretty firm. And I don't know if it's broke. I don't even know if it's broke. If it broke it down.
But yeah, but don't think, isn't one way that we protect ourselves or keep people honest? Don't they have to give you a breakdown of how much time they spent, and you have like a per diem, or you have all these costs already arranged ahead of time. So even though it's that figure, if they end up putting in less time, then the figure should come in lower.
Right. Absolutely.
So they don't just get to say, well, the job's 71, and so we're going to charge 71. They have to actually document.
When they bill me, they bill me an hourly rate for the people on this. So if there's a project engineer, draftsman, administration, it's all broken down every month when they bill us. Whether it's them, Weston, Sampson, anybody. I've got to have a number so that I can execute a contract and encumber the funds, but it's not a firm number.
Okay.
Susan, you have something?
No, actually, Ted answered my question when you went through all the litany of all the pumps we have, and that was my question.
Okay, so if we approve this, this goes to finance, and I'm sure it comes back to us once you've gotten into the project and you know a little better what the what it means.
I'll find out some information, and I'll see if I can.
It's such an old building. We do have in here that you're going to do a structural assessment of the building. I'm just going to throw out there because it maybe it doesn't make sense to renovate this little tiny thing of a building.
Engineered
with that. I mean, maybe it does.
A pre-engineered building?
A prefab.
This thing is very old and needs everything to sound like.
No, not really. Lighting, brick up the windows. I mean, aside from the door and the windows and the roof, I mean, the brickwork and the well floor is structurally sound.
Okay, all right.
Probably last longer than a
I just noticed the structural assessment.
I don't exactly understand what they mean by that, because it's really, I think the structural assessment, they're looking at the roof and the brick in the windows and things like that. I mean,
so I'm just wondering, seems to me something like this as a way of mosquito control, but what you're really doing is changing the ecology of this whole area, right? Because you're not allowing the water to sit there where it normally does. And but this has been going on for
decades.
I don't know the reason behind it.
It allows us to use the toe.
Conservation area, right? Mm-hmm. Does conservation have jurisdiction over this area? Anybody want
to move to approve?
Okay, we have a motion from Councilor Danberg. All in favor? Moving it to finance. We're done.